A promise made in the Canadian wilderness, knees shot, tears in the dirt, miles from anywhere, is not a promise you can quietly forget. I'm Chuck. This is Restless Viking Radio Season 2, stories about the things you show up for before you know why, and what they turn out to be worth.
Last week we were on Thunder Bay Island pulling staples out of walls and riding rusty tractors. This week we traded bugs for a cruise ship, a bartender named Luis, and a game show that neither of us planned to be on. Spoiler, we were on television. I'm Poppins. Let's go.
The fire had just started to settle in. We'd reached the eyeball that afternoon, 200 feet of granite rising straight out of the bush. A couple of days of back roads, wrong turns, water crossings, bush, and radio chatter sat in our bodies. The wilderness around us did what it always does. It waited. Dragonflies filled the air. Not a few, hundreds, maybe thousands. They moved through the clearing, brushing past us, hovering, then darting away. Poppins watched them quietly. She looked younger like that, still taking it in. Someone suggested a walk to the river to wash up. We had a few new people on the trip, and cleanliness felt polite. We talked it around the circle, sweat, dust, the smell of long days driving and clearing brush. Before the discussion finished, Poppins was already standing, wash kit in hand, towel over her shoulder. She wasn't asking, she was moving. She hadn't showered in a couple days. I hadn't noticed. I grabbed a dish towel from the cook box and a beat-up bottle of camp soap. She looked at it, then looked at me. "You can use my soap," she suggested. She paused. "Where's your towel?" I held up the dish towel. She didn't roll her eyes, and it took effort not to. We started the walk to the river. The two-track was easy enough at first. Wide, familiar, forgiving. Then it wasn't. The forest closed in and the ground turned unreliable. Old skidder ruts had hardened into trenches. Every step became a decision. She slowed. I slowed with her. The rest of the group kept going, talking excitedly. She didn't complain. Didn't ask to stop, didn't say anything. The trees started reaching for us, grabbing our packs, slapping at our knees. Roots grabbed at her boots. Then a sharp hitch in her step, then another. She tried to work through it, years of surgeries pushing back. She made it a few more yards before her knees gave up. When the tears came, they didn't announce themselves. "Damn it," she said, face tilted upward, eyes squeezed shut. She sat back against a tree, her breath hitching. Her eyes and cheeks were wet. I crouched in front of her. "Just about 500 feet," I said. "You doing okay?" A tear slipped from her cheek and hit the dirt. "I just want to go somewhere warm," she said, voice tight through her tears, "with a swim-up bar." I didn't answer right away. "I'll tell you what," I finally said. "If you get through this, I'll take you on a cruise." "Really?" she said, her head bowed toward the ground. "Yeah," I said. "Whatever you want." She lifted her head. Her eyes were brown, clear, focused. They didn't look away. They moved to my left eye, then to my right. I didn't say anything. The crying stopped immediately, not fading, gone. "Wait," I thought. She stood, settled her pack on her shoulders, and stepped past me. I stayed crouched there, watching her go. Too fast. My eyes narrowed on her. Then I stood. "Poppins," I said. She stopped and turned to me. I slowly raised my arm and pointed in the other direction. "This way." Without a word, she changed course and walked toward the river.
The promise had been there for almost 2 years, doing its quiet work. It was late one night when we were being old people in the living room, socks on stools, laptops open. "So where do you want to go?" he said impatiently. "Wait," I said. "Where? What?" "The cruise," he said. "The cruise?" And then I remembered. "Anywhere warm," I said. 10 days, 2 weeks, he asked, like I was completing a survey. I didn't answer. I just watched him. He tapped at his phone. Elevator music came on. Then a friendly voice already halfway through her greeting. He gave her the details and said he had a few questions. "Am I able to get 2 drink packages for myself?" he asked quickly. "Oh," I thought, "he's decided." "I don't think you can, sir." Her voice was tinny through the speaker. "You've already booked 2 unlimited drink packages for this cruise." "Are you sure it'll be enough?" he asked. There was a pause. Yes, sir, it's unlimited." It says the top shelf spirits are limited to 20 a day. Silence. I smiled and turned back to work on my laptop. 20 a day seems quite limiting, he said flatly. What happens if I need more? 20 is, well, it's like a lot of spirits, sir. Do you think you would need more than that? He let her go on for a few seconds, then he tapped his phone and cut her off mid-sentence. He sighed loudly, clicked the mouse, and closed the screen. Okay, it's done. He stood up, he went to the kitchen, and came back with a bottle of whiskey. No glass. He turned on Seinfeld and stared at nothing. Finally, I asked, when?
I felt a snap in my jaw as my mouth stretched wide. I sucked in an involuntary gulp of air. Hundreds of early risers mumbling and fidgeting, standing, sitting, staring at the gates behind me. I thought about the cattle auction holding pens I visited as a kid, feeder cattle waiting for their turn in the arena. I sighed, then turned to look at the massive floating building of white steel right outside the huge windows. The auction gates had a Norwegian Cruise Line sign over it. It was early, 5 a.m., I think. I sucked down the last of my coffee and looked over at Poppins. She looked back, her eyes squinting, her smile broad. She tightened her shoulders and let out a small squeak. Yeah, so exciting, I said, shifting my gaze into some distant refuge of escape. Bags were hoisted, straps were settled on shoulders, and a line formed. Poppins was geared up and moving. I grabbed my pack and stood, knees cracking, a slight daze pulling over me. We got on the ship just as the sky silkened into gray, then morning. We found our cabin. It was small and optimistic. A slider to a deck let in early signs of the new day. I opened it, still holding my gear, and stood there. The salt water overpowered the sanitized smell behind me. I watched tugboats leave for their shift on the water. I turned back inside. Okay, Poppins, I commanded. Let's do this. She was half unpacked, filling drawers and organizing toiletries. I dropped my pack and kicked it into the corner. What's first? Poppins picked up the remote and the TV faded to life with a blue screen outlining dozens of things to do. I watched her, then looked at the screen. Towel animal folding class. Rubber duck scavenger hunt. Hairy belly flop contest. I slowly turned toward her. She ignored me. Then a door knock. She turned, and I stepped past to answer it. Our cabin steward appeared almost immediately, smiling, moving fast, efficient in a way that felt practiced, kind. He showed us switches, buttons, and drawers I didn't plan to use. Poppins listened. I nodded. He asked where we were from. We told him. He smiled wider. He might have bowed and left. I dislike cruises. Everything is decided in advance, and somehow that's supposed to feel like freedom. Eventually, we ended up in an alcove next to a corridor between two large rooms. It had billowy leather chairs and small shades with Edison bulbs above the tables. It looked like a Royal Geographic Society clubhouse. A small bar dominated one end with a crisply dressed man behind it. He smiled broadly as I approached. Hello, he said cheerfully, drawing a glass. He looked like he had been standing there since the ship left port. Hello, I returned. Could I get a bourbon neat and something sweet and dangerous for the lady? He looked at Poppins and repeated, Hello, painkiller? Poppins smiled back, then shrugged. Sure. I mounted a stool, paused. I'll have that, too. Poppins slid onto the next stool, scanning the TV screen above the liquor bottles. I'm Chuck. This is Poppins, I said, pulling a wad of cash from my front pants pocket to inspect. I'm Luis, he responded, sliding the bourbon to me. Then he turned off the ice shaver and poured two slushies, added a pineapple, and slid them to us. I slid a pile of 20s back to him. Luis, I said seriously, I'd rather be fishing in a cyclone than to be here. Could you keep track of me? He looked at the money for a moment. He smiled and gave me a nod. Then he reached out. I looked at his hand. I hesitated, then grabbed it. He gave me another nod. Poppins was already chatting with another couple, ignoring her drink. They were discussing their kids and the move to college. I took a sip of whiskey. It was better than I expected. Not great, but better. Then I chased it with a painkiller and immediately thought I betrayed myself. Across the hallway, a couple in matching Hawaiian shirts studied a sign like it was a contract. The not-so-newlywed game. Poppins turned and offered me as an introduction. This is my husband, Chuck. I nodded. So you don't want to be here, the lady asked. "What's your name?" I replied, almost interested. "Dee," she said, then lifted her hand. "This is Jim." "Hey, Jim. Nice to meet you guys," I said, gulping the rest of my bourbon. I turned with an empty glass. Another was sitting on the bar, the liquid still wiggling back and forth. Louise smiled at me, wiping another glass.
Dee and Jim had to go. We stayed at the bar longer than I wanted. I grabbed my drink and slid off the bar stool. Chuck was asking Louise about his life back home. When I stood back to look at the computer screen again, I noticed a young couple. They moved with purpose and started organizing a table by a set of speakers. I took a sip of my drink and moseyed over. The young girl looked up with a practiced smile and said, "Hi, are you here for Act It Out?" She held a laminated sheet of rules. "Yes," I said, not really sure what she was talking about. I read the rules as I strolled to a back table. I sat down and settled in. Chuck and Luis were deep in conversation. They leaned into each other as they talked. I saw Chuck look at my stool, then the hallway, then to the couple arranging the table, and then he turned to Luis. Luis nodded his head in my direction. Chuck turned and watched me. A family with two little ones walked into our little hideaway. The kids circled like busy satellites. The boy ran his car over every table he passed. The girl sauntered, swinging her dress, and looked at me. I smiled like it was a secret. She gave me a crooked smile back. I could hear Chuck say, "Thanks, Luis," as he left the bar with two painkillers in hand. He watched the family take a seat as he carefully guided the drinks to my table. He pushed one drink toward me and gulped half of his. More people filtered in as if they were scheduled to arrive. Then the speaker came to life. "Good afternoon, everyone. Are you ready to play Act It Out?" There was a smattering of applause. Chuck sipped his drink and watched. "It's basically charades," our host explained. The rules were quickly covered and they split us into two teams. The little boy went first. He looked at his card and shrugged his shoulders. The host leaned in and whispered in his ears. His eyes lit up. He started flailing his arms over his head in a wild, awkward windmill fashion. Confused looks followed. No one tried to guess. "You're a helicopter," I announced. He showed his toothless grins and took a seat. All eyes were on me, even Chuck's, his mouth open. "How?" he asked. "I know kids," I said, shrugging my shoulders. There was applause. Chuck didn't hesitate when his turn came. He stood up. He acted it out confidently. Our team got it right away. He sat back down, crossed his legs, and observed the room. The kids howled, and I laughed harder than I meant to. "You're good at this," I said. He shrugged. "You're the actress." I liked that answer. We played a few rounds. Time moved faster than I expected. When it ended, the host thanked everyone and announced the winners. It was us. Chuck got up, walked back to Luis, got another drink, and sat at the bar stool watching the room. He lifted his glass toward the kids, who lifted their juice boxes and sippy cups. I just watched him and smiled. Gary, one of the hosts, walked over to me and gave us a gift card for the gift shop. I held it up so Chuck could see. I saw the corner of his lip tug a little. Then it was covered with another drink.
Time on a ship gets weird. Breakfast shows up 5 minutes after lunch. Suddenly it's dark again. I talk to people, not in an organized way, just enough to get past the brochure. Kids, divorce, one guy trying to quit drinking, the usual late-night bar confessions. Once they left the conversation, I left too. That's all I needed. Poppins drifted easily through it all. Kids found her without trying. She crouched to their level, asked names, learned which one liked sharks and which ones hated the water. Parents relaxed when she smiled at them. They always do. When we docked, I walked. Poppins walked beside me. At the ruins, I climbed everything they let me climb. Stone steps worn smooth by centuries of feet. Narrow stairways rising into the heat and insects and silence. From the top, the jungle stretched out in every direction, thick and breathing. On a bus ride back, smoke rose in the distance. "They burned sections for farming," I said mostly to myself. "Small plots, springtime, just enough for the crops." Poppins nodded, watching the window. I remembered other roads, watching villages for drug runners, days digging wells and setting up clinics, other days talking with school kids in an old fort. The memory came back and went without asking permission. At the market, women had laid their goods on blankets, carved figures, woven cloth, bracelets dyed the color of rust and leaves. I knelt. asked prices, smiled, handed her bills, walked away without taking anything. Back on the ship, coffee stayed in my hand longer than usual. Evenings came with whiskey or a painkiller. I learned which bartenders were dads, which ones carried weight. At night, the ocean looked endless, black water, broken only by the ship's wake. I leaned on the rail and stared into it. Poppins stepped out onto the balcony one night, a book tucked under her arm. She stood beside me without speaking for a while. "Thank you," she said eventually. "For what?" "For being here." I nodded. "Well, thanks for keeping me." She smiled, rested her head against my shoulder, and went back inside to read. We caught a show or two, nothing memorable, enough to laugh at, enough to clap at the end, enough to say we'd seen it. By the third or fourth night, people started greeting us in passing, small nods, quick hellos. Then one evening, as we passed through our usual alcove bar, the big room was buzzing. I spotted an open couch toward the back and motioned to it. An empty couch in a cruise ship is a commodity. I sat. Poppins was gone. I scanned the room and found her crouched at a table, writing. She finished, folded the paper, and dropped it into a kettle. She smiled at the person guarding it, then strolled over and sat beside me. "What was that?" I asked. "Oh," she said, "a raffle or something." "For what?" I asked, watching her ignore me. "I don't know," she shrugged. I kept my eyes on her, then looked toward the stage. A sign flickered on. The not-so-newlywed game. I looked back at her. She smiled, kicking her feet slightly. "You'll be fine," she said, like I was a toddler having a fit. I sighed and leaned back. The room filled. Cameras appeared, real ones, studio style. Lights came up. Then the announcement. "Hello, everyone. Welcome to the not-so-newlywed game." He dragged the word out like it was taffy. The kettle was brought to the stage. Names were drawn. Two couples climbed up. "Chuck and Martha Hayden." I closed my eyes. My shoulders dropped. I stood up like I was lifting a car. Poppins was already on stage, shaking hands with a polished host and even shinier hostess. He wore a tuxedo. She wore something they call an evening gown. Both of them smiled like it was going exactly according to plan. I followed on heavy feet and climbed onto the stool. I looked out to the audience, and a lady stood clapping wildly. Suddenly, she squealed like a train whistle. Poppins turned to me with a giant grin. Her eyes were like sparklers. My eyes narrowed. "You asked for this, Poppins." Then I grinned my best sociopath grin. Poppins looked at me, first my left eye, then my right. Her clapping slowed. My grin widened. Then the lady squealed again, and we both jumped. I started slowly clapping my hands. The host launched into her introduction, asking couples their names, their stories, and they worked their way down the line toward us. They got to Poppins and she introduced us. In a faint Colombian accent, the host asked how long we'd been married and flipped the mic toward me. I took it. Didn't answer right away. I leaned forward, caught the eye of the woman in the second row close enough that she stiffened a little and smiled. "Long enough," I said, handing the mic back like I just returned something I borrowed. There was a beat, then laughter. Not the polite kind, the surprised kind. I leaned back in the stool and checked reactions. The men were excused backstage. I stayed for a bit, staying present, then gave Poppins a peck and casually strolled to the door. The other two husbands were seated in two chairs in the next room, which was our little alcove bar. One of them actually looked nervous. A crew member in a tuxedo stood next to him and motioned to a seat and said, "Take a load off." I ignored him and looked down the bar and called, "Luis, could I trouble you for two painkillers?" "Absolutely," he said, already working on them. I was the last to enter backstage, two drinks in my hands. Poppins looked at me, trying not to laugh, then looked at the door I just came from. As we settled in, she asked, "Where did you get those?" "Luis hooked me up," I replied, scanning the crowd again. The questions came fast. Answers were sometimes awkward, sometimes got applause. Then I got a good one. "So your wife is having a wardrobe malfunction. You have to get her a bra at the store. What size do you get her?" The microphone tilted toward me. I paused just long enough to make it awkward. The host tilted the microphone back and said, "It's a number between 1 and 100 and a letter between A and Z. I looked at the host and with a stout voice said, "100Z. The crowd snickered, then laughter. "Well," the host said, grinning at the card, "she wrote you would bring her duct tape, so at least you tried." The crowd cracked up. Poppins laughed, then looked at me with a smile and an exasperated head shake. I gave a small bow like I planned it. "All right, ladies," the host clapped. "Off stage, husbands stay put." They shuffled the women away. The two guys beside me suddenly looked like they'd been called to the principal's office. One cracked his knuckles, the other stared at the lights. I stayed on the stool, took a slow sip, let the room settle. I'd talked in worse rooms than this. A cruise ship game show didn't exactly register as pressure. Across the room, Luis caught my eye. Apparently word was spreading for some reason. I lifted my glass. He nodded. The host flipped to the next card and smiled like she'd just found a live wire. Oh, this is a good one. I leaned forward. All right, let's have some fun. Oh, gentlemen, she said. Here we go. She read it slowly. Where was the craziest place you two ever made whoopee? The crowd howled. The first guy tightened. He squeezed his eyes shut. The car, he muttered. Polite applause. The second guy puffed up like this was his moment. The beach, he said proudly. Big arm pump, bigger applause. Good for him. Then the mic turned toward me. I didn't answer right away. I just leaned forward, looked out at the crowd like we were about to negotiate something. All right, I said. I'm going to need some help deciding this one. They quieted down, without missing a beat. It was either the top of Crowder's Mountain with my bare ass looking out over all of North Carolina, a couple gasps, a little laugh, or I held up a finger and it seemed like the crowd leaned in. The bathroom of an Art Van furniture store. There was a beat of silence. Then someone yelled, Art Van! That was his choice. The others joined in agreement. The squealing lady slapped the table and Luis grabbed a seat to stay. The other host bent at the waist, laughing, and from behind the podium looked out over the crowd like a proud father. Okay, she said, maintaining her composure. She sauntered back to the other side like it was an evening gown competition. We're writing both down, she said, like it was a challenge. I just shrugged. They brought the women back in. Poppins walked out like she'd already won something. The first wife couldn't answer, covered her face. We'll come back to you, the host said gently. The second wife. The beach! The husband gave a small, tight fist pump like he just won a raffle. Applause, kissing, very wholesome. The mic drifted to Poppins. She looked up at the ceiling, counting on her fingers. We know, the host said sympathetically, then paused while Poppins continued counting on her hand. The host continued, yes, we know, but he gave us two. Then she tilted the mic toward Poppins.
Crowder's Mountain?
The crowd murmured. The host flipped her hair, then leaned in to get a better look at Poppins' face. Then...
And the bathroom of a furniture store?
The room detonated. The host turned to the audience, mouth agape, eyes wide. People stood up. Luis jumped to his feet, clapping and whistled. The host at the podium doubled over and stayed doubled over. The crowd started standing. A guy in the front row said, You, sir, as he shook his head appreciatively. I stood up, turned my back to the crowd, and offered Poppins a high five. She returned it, laughing. After that, it was over. Except it wasn't. Because apparently, the ship ran replays a few times a day on the cabin channel. Which we didn't know. For the rest of the day and into the next few days, it was elevator doors open. Hey, 100Z, pointing at Poppins. Someone at breakfast. Furniture store guy. Luis just slid my drink over without asking and said, Celebrity discount today. I couldn't tell what Poppins was thinking. She sat calmly at the bar. I dropped down to get a better look at her face.
I thought we were anonymous,
she said, a smile tugging hard. She flipped her hair back and looked me in the eyes, and her smile grew.
But I guess we're kind of a big deal.
My mouth curved into a grin. Later that morning, we boarded a launch to visit something on land. I don't remember what it was, but an old lady already seated stared at me while I stood across from her. Hard stare, suspicious, like I owed her money. I ignored it. She kept staring. Finally, I sighed and said with intent, What? She pointed at me. Her eyes narrowed, her face fierce. I saw you on TV. Then she smiled like she'd caught me shoplifting. Poppins guffawed. I gave the lady a fist bump and she returned it without hesitation. She smiled at Poppins and winked. Poppins held a railing above her head. She looked at the lady for a long pause, smiling and winked back. Then Poppins looked at me with mock exasperation, shaking her head. I shrugged. Told you, I said. You asked for this. Promises you make in the wilderness don't care about your comfort. They just sit there, quiet and patient, waiting to see if you meant it. Poppins asked for a cruise. I gave her Art Van furniture on cable television. That's not romance, that's showing up. Showing up doesn't look like candlelight and soft music. Sometimes it looks like a game show you never wanted to be on. Answering questions you'd rather dodge, in front of people you'll never see again. Marriage isn't finding someone who makes life easier. It's finding someone worth embarrassing yourself for. And then doing it again. And again. Because the promise matters more than the discomfort.
On the beach.
On the beach, all right. Chuck.
Somebody needs some help with this. It's either the top of Crowder's Mountain with my open ass sticking out all over North Carolina, or the bathroom of Art Van Furniture.
Ladies, where has been the craziest, wildest place you've ever made?
The beach.
It was very memorable. All right, it's a ding, ding, ding. Now, I know that there are, yes, he chose two. So let's see if you can match any of those.
Crowder's Mountain. Yeah. And the bathroom at his furniture store.
You guys are wild.
Next week, I'm 13 years old, behind the wheel of a truck I have no business driving. My employer watches from a distance and doesn't intervene. 35 years later, I'm standing at his funeral. Funny thing about promises, they don't ask if you're comfortable when it's time to keep them. They just wait. Until then, don't make one, unless you're willing to see how it turns out.